Historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to cook for you. Gumbo is the state dish of Louisiana, and which part of the state you're in can dictate what gumbo you're cooking. But folks, whether it's chicken, game, seafood, as they say, it's all good. Join me, Chef John Falls, and author Gwen McKee as we talk about gumbo and Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Syria's main political opposition group says it will attend international peace talks in Geneva next week. Members of the Syrian National Coalition today voted to attend the so-called Geneva II talks, though the vote was far from unanimous. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports the vote was taken after scores of members left the coalition.
The coalition announced the vote on social media and via email, stating that 58 yes votes had carried the day amid a total of 73 voters. The coalition has been bitterly divided over whether to attend the international talks, dubbed Geneva II. Some 44 members refused to vote, underscoring both the fractious nature of the opposition and the lack of confidence that this meeting can do much to quell the bloodshed that has racked Syria. Rebel fighters inside Syria have rejected attending. The regime in Damascus, with some support from Russia, insists that the meeting is to focus on fighting terrorism, while Secretary of State John Kerry says the gathering will work toward a transitional government. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
A group of plane crash survivors are suing Boeing, claiming it failed to install adequate safety systems in some of its planes. Nova Safo reports from Chicago.
The lawsuit stems from the Asiana Airlines crash last July, in which a Boeing 777 came in for a landing just short of the runway at San Francisco International Airport and hit a seawall. Three people died and more than 180 others were injured. Now a group of those passengers is suing Chicago-based Boeing in Illinois State Court. The passengers claim the aircraft that crashed had inadequate low-speed warning and automatic correction systems, and they say Boeing should have done more to train the pilots. The crash investigation has shown that low speed and not enough training were factors in the Asiana Airlines crash. Boeing says it has no comment on the lawsuit. For NPR News, I'm Nova Safo in Chicago.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo kicked off the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday weekend today by telling supporters of the Reverend Al Sharpton that New York must stop treating 16- and 17-year-olds as adults in the criminal justice system. Cuomo says the late civil rights leader believes social justice took hard work.
Justice is not going to just happen. You know, justice is not an evolutionary process. Justice happens if we make it happen. The arc of the moral universe is long, and it bends towards justice if we bend the arc.
The Democratic governor also touted his administration's efforts to expand the number of state contracts that go to minority and women-owned businesses. Philadelphia police say one boy has been cleared, one has surrendered, and a third is being sought in the shooting of another boy and girl hanging out with other students in a high school gym. The shooting happened yesterday at a charter school in North Philadelphia. This is NPR News. At the Australian Open, this year's first Grand Slam tennis tournament, the fourth round of play is set to get underway shortly. As Stuart Cohen reports from Melbourne, the intense heat wave that's been sizzling the tournament for most of the past week broke overnight.
Temperatures at the Melbourne Park Tennis Centre dropped from nearly 110 degrees Fahrenheit to the upper 60s in just 24 hours, bringing welcome relief to the world's top tennis players as they vied for the final spots in the fourth round at the Australian Open. There are no surprises on the men's side. World number one Rafael Nadal, returning champ Novak Djokovic, and other Australian Open fixtures Andy Murray and Roger Federer will all be playing for a spot in the quarterfinals starting Sunday. On the women's side, Serena Williams continues her quest for a record 6 sixth Australian Open title, facing Serbia's Ana Ivanovic in the fourth round. And Sloane Stephens comes up against returning champ Victoria Azarenka in a rematch of a controversial loss in last year's Open. For NPR News, I'm Stuart Cohen in Melbourne.
A New York City hotline recorded more than 260,000 noise complaints last year, despite a major crackdown on the issue. Queens resident Jennifer Olson says the din of traffic impacts her daily life.
I basically live next to LaGuardia Airport, and all these trucks with like all the food for the airport, they just come going down my street at like 5 in the morning, and I really don't appreciate that.
Despite thousands of violations notices issued last year, health officials warn there are still plenty of places where decibel levels top 85. That's a level that can cause hearing damage with prolonged exposure. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to ensure all Americans have access to health care. At rwjf.org.
For the finest in classic ska, rock steady, rockers, DJ, dance hall, and dub. It's Jamon. Cecil here, bringing you Southwest Louisiana's longest-running reggae tradition, Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights from 9 to 11 p.m., or Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m., and streaming live anytime at krvs.org.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, welcome everybody to Stirring It Up, and thank you so much for joining us at the kitchen table today. It's been a long holiday season, and now we're kind of coasting out of it as we look forward to Mardi Gras. That slow season of Mardi Gras.
We just go season to season, don't we?
Oh, I tell you what, it's so nice to welcome Michelle Yark, our executive producer, to the table here. How are you doing?
I am doing very well. In recovery.
Yeah, you're getting over all that holiday stuff, huh?
Yeah, in recovery from the sugar overload.
I tell you, the thing that distresses me is that it's almost Christmas again. Oh, I just can't even think about it. You know, it's only 11
months
away.
I can't either.
It's 11 months away. It'll be here in a second, I tell you. Yeah. It's coming
right. I guess Christmas is kind of like grandchildren from what I hear. Glad to see it come, glad to see him go.
Oh, goodness.
Across the glass wall, of course, our engineer, Dean Slomak, keeping the sound balance, music dynamic over there. How's everything going with you?
Everything's looking good over here on this screen, and,
Now that the big season's over with, I mean, you're relaxing a little bit because you play a lot of music over the season. So,
yeah.
So you've probably been enjoying this last...
We're getting close to the slow season. That's February. It's slowing down.
Yeah, slowing down,
slowing
yeah.
down. Because December, that's the big one.
Yeah, well, December's a big one for everybody. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, y'all, it's so nice to have all of you, as I say, sitting around the kitchen table with us today. Michelle, you look a little... bundle up there. I mean, the weather's not that cold here for you to be have all that on. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to tell you how to dress, but
you don't.
No, I don't. I'm just saying.
You don't want to, but you will
to. I'm just saying. I mean, Slime and I are sitting here all cozy in the studio. I got my short sleeve on. You look like you're coming out of the. You look very nice. Let me say.
Well, you know, I was kind of thinking it's kind of gumbo weather.
The gumbo weather.
Yeah, it's kind of gumbo weather, so I wanted to dress the part. I admit it's warmer here than it was when we were in New York recently, I have to admit, but, you know, You can always discover a nice little place, a little nook or cranny to duck into and have a hot bowl of gumbo, but not New York.
You mean you were looking for the Fifth Avenue gumbo shop?
Yeah, did you see it?
No, I didn't see the Fifth Avenue gumbo shop. Anyway, somehow that doesn't even sound right when you talk about the gumbo and you talk about the Fifth Avenue gumbo shop. But gumbo is such a regional dish. You know, it's kind of in the blood of the people that actually make it. You know, the ingredients are not always easy to find. It's not always easy to reproduce if you're not from around this area.
Right.
At the same time, I think...
And when you say this area, you mean South Louisiana.
South Louisiana. Well, unless you're in Lower Alabama, they'll fight you for that too, you know, the other L.A., you know. But anyway, you know, I'm always amazed at the mystique that surrounds gumbo to begin with. You know, New York has great delis. They have their great sandwiches. Chicago, you're going to get the great deep dish pizza, that wonderful Chicago dog that they talk about. Philly has a cheese steak, and you're going to get that when you go there, and you know you're going to search it out. Well, Louisiana has its gumbo, and gumbo rules here in Louisiana, especially South Louisiana. We've got a unique blend of nationalities here that have all made their own unique contributions to the flavor of our gumbo. I'd say there are about as many ways to make gumbo as there are cooks that cook gumbo.
I would definitely agree with that. I guess you could say that each nation in our Louisiana melting pot has really added its own unique regional ingredient to the gumbo pot. It's truly a dish that represents the people of Louisiana. It is the people's dish.
Yeah, and melting pot, I think, is the right way to put it, too. Gumbo, then as now, these gumbos are made from local ingredients, resources, cooking heritages of the people in the area. So you're going to get a different version of gumbo depending where you travel through the back roads of Louisiana, and certainly even in those pockets of the South that claim to be able to make good gumbos. Although the ingredients may differ and often converge, many of them, one ingredient remains consistent. All gumbo will be served over rice. And I guess I could add maybe one other thing to that. All gumbos should, if it's gumbo, have a roux.
That's what they say. First you start with the roux, right?
That's right. First you begin with the roux, they say.
Great thickening agent, right? It is kind of the thickening agent. But there are others.
Well, also, though, gumbo is so much more than a thickening agent. It's a thickening agent, it's a flavoring agent, and it's a coloring agent. So we want to remember that, too.
For the roux.
Yeah.
Okra is one of gumbo's characteristic ingredients, and it's not only thickens the mixture, but it adds flavor to it. In New Orleans, there have been two schools of thought. Actually, there are those who use okra to thicken their gumbo, and there are those who use filet or ground sassafras leaves to thicken the gumbo. Which do you use?
I'm the school of thought that a gumbo has to have a roux, that equal parts of oil and flour that's cooked to different colors, and the degree of color, of course, will determine the thickening and will also determine the flavor and will also determine the color of the gumbo, whereas the filet, which is in fact the thickener, the Native Americans only use filet, which is the ground leaves of the sassafras tree, as the major thickener because they had no wheat flour, so they used the filet, which is kind of, well, let's just say like a cornstarch. Let's use that as an example. It's not, but it has the same property. When you add it to a dish, it'll certainly thicken. I might mention that the ethnic influences of New Orleans gives us very, very diverse gumbos with ingredients taken from the land, the water, the swamps, enhanced by the African influences in the kitchen as well. Very, very influenced by the African influence. Chicken, oysters, crab, shrimp, beef, sausage, ham, all seen in these types of gumbo. And of course, there's the meatless gumbo, that famous gumbo ziab or gumbo z apostrophe herbs, as it looks in writing. Gumbo ziab, made with a variety of greens, again made famous by that great African-American chef, Leah Chase, who serves her gumbo ziab on Holy Thursday. More commonly seen than filet is a dark brown roux, and you'll never see a New Orleans gumbo without the famous Trinity. That's the onions, the celery, the bell pepper that is smothered in that roux to balance the flavors before even the stock is added.
You know, you mentioned Leah Chase. We really should give her a big happy birthday. She celebrated her 91st birthday. So
happy birthday, Leah Chase. Absolutely. Great. Dookie Chase restaurant.
You know, as we continue to travel on our little gumbo road trip, once you move upriver to Baton Rouge through plantation country where the French Creole gumbos, they use tomatoes and okra with a light roux for thickening. You know, and again, around Baton Rouge and plantation country, you see seafood, poultry, meats. But you'll notice that the farther upriver we travel from New Orleans, the darker the roux seems to become, especially when you get to the German coast where you see the addition of andouille and other sausages.
And those other smoked sausages, mm-hmm. yeah. And west of this area is what we call the French Triangle. And that's, if you think about the map of Louisiana, that's all the way from Lake Charles, which is almost near the Texas border, all the way south to Houma, which is almost touching the Gulf of Mexico, that whole region through there, called the French Triangle, where the dark brown flour and oil-based roux, an inclusion of wild game and tasso, which is the Spanish sausage, tasajo, which is a cured, dried, smoky, wonderfully spiced piece of meat that is always added to the gumbo. Or, of course, smoked sausages and andouille will go into it at this point. Okra, of course, will be reflective of the Cachada Indians and, of course, again, French Acadian influences. Closer to the marshes, filet does become common. We mentioned the Indians a minute ago. Mm-hmm. They took the leaves of the sassafras tree and pounded it into a powder that they called filet powder, which was a medicinal herb or leaf. But then at some point it was added to water to thicken. And, of course, the shrimp filet gumbo is the most famous there. Roux in this area tend to be dark, and the gumbo tends to include sausage, game, seafood, often with the addition of crawfish. Again, because the Homeless Indians, their great gift to us was the red swamp crawfish, and even their tribal symbol is the red crawfish. The Native American influence gives gumbo here in this area also an inclusion of squash and beans, which are two of the great gifts of the Creator in the Native American culture. So you're going to start to see really big variances in gumbo, as well as the onion, celery, bell pepper, garlic, green onions, and parsley that you'll see in most gumbos.
So it seems like as we look north, Hill Country, Northern Delta, where the Scotch, Irish, and English settlers were, it seems like we're transitioning from gumbo almost to soup. You almost ask yourself, what truly makes a gumbo rather than a soup? Would you say it's the roux?
You know, I think you're talking about an area now that if you look at the Louisiana map, it's from Monroe all the way across to Bossier Parish, mm-hmm. I mean, West Monroe and that whole area, to Shreveport, the top part of the state. And you mentioned the Scotch, Irish, the English settlers in that area. So, yeah, they're meat people. They're big gardeners. So you're going to definitely find gumbos that start to have more variety. Even you wouldn't find beef or pork normally in a South Louisiana gumbo, but you're
right.
Certainly going to find it up there.
You're right. The large gardens that were attended to, those pots were contributed, beans and peas and tomatoes, even corn. And as we said earlier, the gumbo almost starts to resemble more of a soup.
I think you could be right as compared to the dark roux-based southern gumbo. You know, likewise, along these same areas we're talking about along the Sabine River, here you have a great mix of French settlers. You're talking about Natchitoches, Louisiana now.
Yeah.
You know, the first settlement in Louisiana. You're talking about Indian tribes, the Caddo, the Apache, Choctaw, the Dyess Indians, some Spanish. These folks made their living as trappers and commercial fishermen. So what is that gumbo going to look like? Well, certainly rich with seafood from the rivers and lakes. Certainly smoked meats, because the Spanish are there. They're going to smoke meats. You're going to have some spicy meats in there as well. And, of course, you can bet that the Spanish are dropping hot peppers into the gumbos, and you're going to see a lot of wild game. That's big hunting country up there, big plain country. So many gumbos.
So many gumbos, so little time, right?
Anyway, y'all, we're going to take us a quick break here, and we're going to be right back in a minute where we're going to introduce a guest who's written a nice little book about gumbo.
When you left New Orleans, baby, you were feeling kind of low. Yeah, when you left New Orleans, baby, you were feeling kind of low. Well, grab yourself a fast train. Come on back to the old gumbo.
Yeah. Greetings. I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
No Nouvelle Cuisine, she cooking gumbo, a minor bad gumbo, is the only way she can go.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. Today we're talking about all of our favorite subjects if you live anywhere in, I should say the South almost now, but certainly South Louisiana and Louisiana in general. We're talking about gumbo. And Michelle, we have a great guest with us today. Why don't you go ahead and introduce her?
Well, it would be my pleasure. We have Gwen McKee with us today. She's a Louisiana girl, born and raised right here in Baton Rouge, graduated from LSU, where she studied journalism and English. Today, she is the editor-in-chief of Quail Ridge Press in Brandon, Mississippi, a company that she actually founded with her husband, Barney. And over the past 30 years, Gwen has traveled our great country documenting, learning, testing, tasting, preserving recipes in order to preserve America's food heritage. She and her co-editor, Barbara Mosley, created the 50-volume Best of the Best State Cookbook series that includes more than 20,000 classic recipes. Needless to say, she has appeared on numerous television and radio shows throughout the country, and along with her cookbooks, she has become a familiar face on QVC. Gwen and Barbara have 90 cookbooks to their credit, and on the side, Gwen has created two special little books of her own just for Louisiana, the Little New Orleans Cookbook and the Little Gumbo Cookbook, which, by the way, have each sold over 100,000 copies. I would say that is sweet success. Gwen, welcome to Stirring It Up. It's a delight to have you with us today.
Well, it is my pleasure. I'm just so excited to be talking to you and John. My gosh, he's one of my heroes.
That is so nice of you. And I'm holding in my hand the Little Gumbo book. And the first line says it all. Gumbo. The word itself conjures up warmth and contentment sitting before a steamy bowl of this hearty, rich Creole dish. Gumbo.
Oh, you read that so well. I love it.
Well, hey, all you have to do is think about it. It comes out that way. So how have y'all been up there? In, I'm going to say way up north in Brandon, Mississippi. How have y'all been?
Way up north in Brandon. We're right outside of Jackson. We're not so far up north. We need gumbo here. Sure.
I know you do. How have y'all been?
Oh, we're just terrific. We're just doing fine. We're still eating and loving all this good food. And I am absolutely on my way out to the grocery store as soon as I hang up with you to get all the ingredients to make another vat of gumbo, because we are not secure unless we have gumbo in our freezer. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Look, let me tell you something. We make gumbo all year long just in case a hurricane comes.
There you go. Yes, absolutely. You got to have it. It's security.
That's exactly right. Plus, the frozen gumbo in the freezer acts as big blocks of ice to keep the rest of the freezer cold for those two days where we're out of electricity. Gumbo is a multi-purpose dish.
It definitely is. It definitely is. So I'm going to tell you about my very first time I made gumbo. We moved to Chicago after Bonnie and I were first married back in the 60s. And everybody heard we're from Louisiana. Oh, you know how to make gumbo. I was a newlywed. I didn't know anything about making gumbo. But let me tell you what, I learned quick. I'm on the phone with my mother, my mother-in-law, my aunts, and I found out how to make it. My first pot was not too good, I have to say. We ate it all. But it was more like the texture of spaghetti sauce, you know, with a few shrimp in it. But I learned how to make it, and it became a passion with me. So from day one, I have loved gumbo. And my husband says, gumbo is like soup times 10. And that is an excellent description, don't you think?
It is. I think the first dish that every Louisiana cook, and I'm going to say Louisiana generally speaking, the region, every Louisiana cook feels that they have reached accomplishment in the kitchen when they successfully create a good gumbo. I mean, people are proud to say, I can cook a good gumbo. I made my first gumbo. Oh, my grandmother
taught me.
Isn't that kind of the first step out of the basic kitchen into saying, I'm a real cook. I can make gumbo.
I absolutely agree with that. And let me tell you, back before men were really feeling comfortable about getting in the kitchen and cooking, they would do the barbecuing outside, you know, and with all the cooker stuff. But they started, I think, getting comfortable in the kitchen when they could make a big pot of something, stir it up and throw everything in. And gumbo was something that men felt comfortable about making and perfecting and bragging about. Don't you think that's true?
No, I think it's absolutely true. You know, we go back to the hunters and the trappers' cabins Louisiana when men had to cook. And I think they found that the simplest thing that they could actually throw into that single cast iron pot on top of a wood stove would have been a roux-based soup that required just a really great roux and maybe a little smoked sausage, which of course was a great preservative for meat back then, so you could have some smoked meats with you. And then if you went out to run your trap line or whatever it was going to be, there was no doubt you were coming back with rabbit or duck or maybe even some other small game. And all the ingredients for a great gumbo and onion, celery, bell pepper all kind of held up nicely. Or you could plant them around the trapper's cabin, so you always had your trinity of ingredients. I think gumbo represents the dish that kind of God gave us in the South to make sure that we never go hungry. You know, I think that was our Garden of Eden gift over here, was the simple gumbo.
Oh, it absolutely is. And you know what? I really believe when people talk to you about their gumbo, theirs is the best. And it absolutely is, because, well, you're familiar with what you know how to do best. And when you learn how to make gumbo, you love that. And that is the best gumbo there is.
I told Michelle the story about me, my first little trip out of my home in the swamps of Louisiana, walking 1 mile down the road, which is kind of a journey for us living in the swamps. And I was invited to the home of my good friend in school. I must have been in about fifth grade. And he said, my mother's making a gumbo, and we want you to come eat with us. So I said, oh, my God. So I walked my little mile on that Saturday over to his house and sat down at the table in that bowl of gumbo. All day long we talked about that gumbo. We talked about that gumbo. And my dad, you know, we're just a mile away, but we have our own style of gumbo. And I sit at the table, and the mother comes, and she dips a ladle into, first of all, a shiny pot. I had never seen a shiny pot. I'm from cast iron pot country. I never saw anything aluminum or, in those days, aluminum or one of those colored things. That pot came to the table. I was mesmerized by it and the ladle because I had never seen either one. And she starts to fill my bowl up to the rim with this almost clear broth that had some little pieces of white speck things floating in. And I thought to myself, when's the gumbo coming? When's the gumbo going to get here? And that was the first day I realized that every family in every home was so proud and so passionate about that tradition of gumbo. Tell us a little bit about the variants. I mean, you wrote this beautiful little book, and it really says it all. It only has 25 or so recipes in it, but they're the best 25. And you know, when you say gumbo, 25 recipes for one dish, if somebody says, oh, I got 25 recipes for spaghetti, you'll almost faint. But if you say 25 gumbo recipes for gumbo, it makes sense. Tell us about the varieties, the variants, and some of the similarities that you've seen in gumbo in the South.
Well, as you well know, gumbo can be made with just about any amount of ingredients, like you were talking about the hunters. Anything you shoot, you can put in gumbo. But the roux starts it all, of course. And there's so many different ways to make roux. You can bake it. You can make it. Nowadays, people want to lose weight. You can make a dry roux without any oil at all and keep it. It's just a browned flour that does give you some flavor. Now, my favorite is the old raw iron skillet roux, and I love to watch it turn colors. But I also make microwave roux that I really, really like. When I'm in a hurry, I make microwave roux. I'm no use sneering at me.
No. I make microwave roux, too. I make microwave roux with oil and without oil. I make them both.
Yes, indeed, absolutely. And that's another thing. Rice is a whole different thing. There's all kind of ways to make rice, and I tell about that in the book. But my way of making rice, of gumbo, is white rice. We always had it that way. I've eaten it with brown rice. I've eaten it with every kind of rice there is and every kind of way you can cook it. But I want my white rice and my gumbo.
See, she's a traditionalist. I like that.
Look, when I sit down to my favorite bowl of gumbo, it has a scoop of potato salad inside of the rim.
Yes.
Have you ever had potato salad?
I love that.
That's the German in me. The Germans always put that scoop of potato salad in the rim of the gumbo bowl, and that way when you scoop that spoon into the potato salad and then you came across and picked up that dark, swarthy gumbo with all that smoke flavor and all that beautiful.
John, you are a man of good taste.
Most often that first spoon would go straight on up to heaven, right through the roof of the house.
But you know, a lot of people, you tell them you put potato salad in your gumbo, they say, what?
Oh, my God, what a great tradition.
Put a little bit of that in the spoon and the gumbo. Oh, that is so good. But, you know, mix it in. I wrote the book with the explicit purpose of telling anybody anywhere that you can make gumbo. It is so warm and welcoming, and no matter what you have, you can put in it. You mentioned in one of our conversations earlier about, do they really cook caribou in Alaska? Yes, they do. Now, I don't know whether they make gumbo, but they do make stews, and they make things that they put all of anything they can shoot or kill, you know, into their soups and stews. And so gumbo, I think, is more of a Louisiana dish than any other dish. In fact, some people say that gumbo is the national dish of Louisiana. And I also think that the stock is such a huge thing of making gumbo. Yes, it's the roux, of course. Yes, it's the spices and the seasoning, and we do like it a little bit hot. But I have to have a really good stock. People who just put water in gumbo, that's okay if you cook it all day. I have to have a little body. I want to cook my chicken or my caribou or whatever and boil it a while to get me some good stock.
Sure, sure. You know, I do. In fact, when I do a chicken and andouille gumbo, I'll take the chicken and I'll take the andouille and cut it in about 4-inch lengths, the sausage, the smoked sausage, and I'll put it in a pot with the amount of water I need. If I'm doing a gallon of water, I'll bring it to a boil, reduce it to simmer, and I'll let the chicken and the andouille slowly cook for about 45 minutes until the chicken gets tender, and the water picks up all of that smoky flavor in chicken. But like my grandfather used to say, why are you wasting your time doing that? If you put the chicken and you put the andouille in the pot with the roux in the water, don't you get the same flavor? I said, yeah, but you can't cook it as long. I can cook it an hour, hour and a half. If I do it with the roux in the pot, then I got to keep adding water to it. I'd rather flavor the water first. The problem, though, is, Gwen, if people put 2 gallons of water and then they put their chicken and sausage in, they dilute all of that great flavor.
That's
then
right.
They only use a gallon of it. The other gallon goes down the drain with all of that beautiful flavor. So if you're going to boil your chicken or your sausage or your deer meat or your duck, which I would suggest, in water to create a great stock before you make your gumbo, make sure that you end up with about a quart less stock than you're going to need in your gumbo. That way you can add some water to it, because that salt, that stock will be so concentrated with the flavor of the smoke and the game or the chicken or whatever you're making. So I always say, if you're going to make a gumbo and you need a gallon of water for the finish, make sure you only start with a gallon. That way you're reducing a very rich, rich, rich stock. And then you can always add water to the gumbo at the end. But don't throw any of that stock away. That's the big mistake people make.
Oh, no, stock is precious. I freeze stock. That is so precious.
I love what you said about stock, because the first gumbos I made, I thought, this does not taste like my grandmother's. What is missing? What is missing? And I finally discovered that it was the crab stock that she used. And, yeah. Oh, my gosh, did that make the difference.
I tell people over and over in this little book that gumbo is better the next day. In fact, I never serve it the same day. Of course you can, but the flavors have to have time to marry, like we say all the time. You have to have it cook for a while, and when you put it even in the refrigerator for a while before you serve it, it just tastes so much better.
Well, that's what I was going to say, the same thing, that that really when people ask me what makes a great gumbo, my answer is always the same. Making it the day before always makes the best gumbo. And I should mention that you said stock a minute ago. Absolutely, in a variety of good smoked meats to really enhance the flavor is what gives, I think, our Louisiana gumbo that authentic difference to gumbos that are made very simply with just a dark brown roux, onion, celery, bell pepper, chicken in it. You're going to have a great soup, but once you start to add the smoked meats of the Germans from St. Charles Parish, St. John the Baptist Parish on the river, the Ondua, the smoked sausage, the Tasso of the Prairie region of Louisiana around Opelousas and those. You're going to start to get some unique flavors in gumbo that simply the main ingredient cannot deliver to the stock. Always make sure that you make it the day before if you want a really big hit at the table. All those flavors will marry. Michelle?
Gwen, you have a recipe in here, or more than one, for crock pot gumbo. Now, I have never thought about crock pot gumbo. Tell us about that, and do you find the flavors is great?
In that particular recipe, I've pre-made a roux, and yes, the flavor is very good. As in all crock pot recipes, I'm not a huge crockpot fan because, to me, it's kind of a little bit more watery. I prefer things cooked on the stove and have time to let the flavors get into it and let it cook down. That's my favorite kind of flavor cooking. But in a crockpot, you absolutely can do it. For people who are in a hurry or who want to let it cook all night or whatever, you can get a very good taste in gumbo that way.
And, Gwen, I can't believe we're already running out of time, but real quickly, with more than 90 books to your credit, what you working on now? What's your next project?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. We have done a Best of the Best from Louisiana 1 and 2, because Louisiana couldn't do with just one Best of the Best cookbook. So we are working right now on Best of the Best Louisiana 3. I am back in heaven working on that book. It is going to be in full color. We're going to have so many things in the book that tell a lot about our beautiful state. And it's going to be almost like you could take it traveling with you for all the stuff it's going to have in it, plus fantastic recipes. And they all come from fantastic cookbooks within the state, with a few recipes from each one that person has chosen out of their book as being one of their favorites.
Yeah, that sounds really great.
This is the best of them all. I think it's just the very best. It's not going to be out until probably late spring, but I'm very, very excited about it. So I'm so glad you asked.
Gwen McKee, y'all, all of her information will be on our website, jfalls.com. We cannot thank you enough for the great work you've done to promote our area and our state. And thank you so much for sharing with all of our listeners your thoughts about gumbo. Thank you so much, Gwen. Everybody, we'll see y'all a little bit later. We're going right to a quick break, and we'll be back in a second.
Said you had it made. If you were looking for the right kind of food, you just kick back and let the evening come. Out on the back porch and gumbo John.
When punk took the world by storm in the 70s, few would have imagined it would take root in South Africa. Hello, Georges Collinet here. Tune in for the little-known story of punk in Africa, Rock Against Apartheid, next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we are going to do a live in-studio listening session as we sit down with Oxford America's Rick Clark to discuss the release of the magazine's annual music issue. This year's issue celebrates the music of Tennessee. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Comics avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Starting It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best culture show on radio. And before we talk more about gumbo, and I love that song, right? That gets everybody's feet tapping.
Yeah,
anyway,
cool.
Y'all, before we talk more about gumbo, let's talk a little bit about our Facebook page. Anything going on Facebook? Any new and exciting?
Yeah,
interest?
Y'all, our Facebook is happening as usual. We have a bunch of photos that Mariette's been posting recently to give everybody a visual to go along with the audio. But yeah, come on by our Facebook page, y'all. Facebook.com/stirringitupradio. And that's our public forum where we encourage people to come on by with good ideas, bad ideas, all ideas, and come by and say hey and make some community.
Well, fantastic, fantastic. And Michelle, what about books on the subject of gumbo? I know we just finished talking about a great one.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, the first book I'd like to suggest is Gwen McKee's The Little Gumbo Book. And although it is little, almost pocket size, it packs a lot of great gumbo in it. More than 27 recipes for all types of gumbos with those great roux recipes we've been talking about. There's even a section on how to prepare rice. Gumbo preparations in here vary from crock pot to cast iron to even microwave gumbo, so you'll be able to choose your favorite cooking method to prepare this iconic dish. Even the best Louisiana cook will love this little gem. Fantastic. It's a great little gift book, too, if you have to send a birthday or anniversary or graduation gift to somebody out of town. Gwen's other little book is also one I want to recommend, The Little New Orleans Cookbook. Another small one, but it's a wonderful one as well. Huge on flavor. Gwen has all of the old-time favorites in there, griots and grits, pan perdue, panade veal cutlets. She even has a recipe for olive salad for our famous muffalata. These are not new books, But I tell you, the fact that they are still available, they're still in high demand, is testament to their popularity. Each one has sold over 100,000 copies, so kudos to Gwen on that. You'll want to have both in your culture and culinary library to make it complete. All the information about these books will be on our website, jfolse.com. And the next time you're in the library, you might want to look up some of Gwen's other cookbooks as well, some of those from around the United States that she's done. I mean, who knows? You might want to prepare a lobster dish one night straight from Maine or some other signature salmon dish from the Great Northwest. So definitely worth a look. Remember to look up Gwen McKee's books on your next trip to the library or bookstore.
And I'm looking at her little gumbo book here. As you said, it's almost pocket size, but you know, it says the little gumbo book utilizes convenient. Now, I want you to think about this: microwave, time freeing a crock pot, dependable cast iron pots for preparing such delicacies as catfish gumbo, low calorie, lean and mean chicken gumbo, as well as crowd pleasing gumbo for impressing a party of 50 people or more. What that's saying is that there's something for everybody in the book. Even though I'm a purist and I like to grab my big cast iron pot and start my roux and keep on going, there's a lot of people out there want to throw it in a crock pot and go to work, and somebody else may have lean because they want to eat a good gumbo, but they're serious about their changing diet habits. So absolutely,
exactly,
these
right.
little pocketbooks are really good, and there's, again, 27 carefully created recipes that will certainly enable everybody to enjoy a special experience with gumbo. So we want to thank Gwen McKee for that.
She has some great little notes on a lot of these recipes, most of them, in fact, that tells you a little something about the gumbo or a little something about the recipe. One in particular that I was reading was about her Aunt Teal's gumbo, her crab gumbo. It was a big deal. She couldn't just have any crab. She would go to the seafood supplier and hand pick every one of the crabs that she used for her gumbo, just short of actually fishing for them herself.
Yeah, she was probably looking for a big fat female crab that had all that roe in it and all that big fat. Anyway, no, really good. You know, one of the things that she brought up, y'all, I want to discuss a little bit right here, and that is talking about stocks in gumbo. The traditional Cajun cook realizes what a stock is. A stock is water or some flavoring liquid. You might add a little wine to it in some cases, but it's generally water, and that water is infused with other flavors, vegetable flavors, meat flavors, smoked flavor, whatever. So if you're going to start a gumbo, and as I say, a gumbo, if you figure a bowl of gumbo is 8 ounces and you want to serve 10 people, it's 80 ounces. So that's about a little bit more than a half gallon or so of water, 2 quarts. I always would think of making a gumbo with about a gallon of water at the most. And most of the purists realize that a good stock is made with vegetables and meat flavor or some other type of smoke flavor, etc., herbs and spices if you wish. The Cajuns, on the other hand, feel that if you're going to take a cast iron pot and make a roux, and into that roux, you're going to put onion, celery, bell pepper, garlic, green onions, and parsley. There's your vegetables. There's your herbs. Then, if a good stock requires, you know, some type of a meat, well, then in your gumbo, you're going to put seafood. Are you going to put chicken? Are you going to put wild game? And there's the meat flavor going into your stock. If a great stock requires thickening of some kind, well, you have your dark brown roux going into the pot. So the typical Cajun cook would think, why should I begin with a stock, pour all of that out, and then start a gumbo? Why not just put it all together and let it slow cook, and it creates the stock while it is flavoring and cooking the meat? Thus comes the theory of the gumbo is always better the next day. The reason the gumbo is better the next day is because we have created a rich stock using a roux as the thickening agent all at the same time. We didn't start, as I said a minute ago, I like to take my chicken, or especially if I'm doing duck or goose that takes a long time to tenderize, I would much rather put that goose, brown it in the oven for a minute, throw it into a stock pot with about a gallon of water, and then add my smoked sausage to it, some diced onion, celery, bell pepper, garlic, And just let that simmer for an hour, 2 hours to create this beautiful stock, and then debone the goose and slice my sausage and then make my roux, and then I have a real fortified stock. But again, when you heard Gwen say the gumbo is always better the day after, that's because traditionally in Cajun country, everything goes in the pot at the same time. You cook it for about an hour and a half to 2 hours, because if you cook it longer than that, you're reducing it and you have to add water. You have to add water because there's starch in it. There's the roux. So try that technique of making your stock first. Go ahead and throw a quartered onion in there, throw a couple, maybe a carrot, throw a little bit of a diced celery, and then go ahead and put a whole chicken in there. It could be the whole chicken. Mm-hmm. Just drop it in that pot. Put a pound of smoky andouille sausage into that pot. Bring it to a rolling boil. Reduce it to simmer. Put a lid on top because you don't want your stock to just evaporate.
That happens to me.
Yeah, well, you got to put a lid on it. Reduce it to simmer and time it for about an hour, hour and a half. What's going to happen, that gallon of water is going to just be fortified with that beautiful flavor of the chicken and the sausage or the duck or the goose or the seafood or whatever's in there. And then you strain that out, and you have just basically the beginnings of your gumbo, your stock. Your meat's already cooked. You can all separate it off of the bone. If you don't want all those bones in the gumbo, you can peel it all off the meat. It's all cooked. And then I always remind people, since the meat is cooked, take half of it and leave it out of the pot. The other half you add to the roux with fresh onion, celery, bell pepper, garlic. Add that stock to it. Let that cook, and you're basically sacrificing that half of the meat to flavor. The other half that's already cooked, you're going to add it to the pot right before serving. That way it's not stringing apart. It's not falling apart. You still have the identity of the meat. All this information is on our recipe page for gumbo as well, or in any of our cookbooks, or even on our website. If you go to jfalls.com and look up gumbo, gumbo technique, roux technique, it's all right there in great style and great fashion.
You know, one of the things that I like too, Gwen said that she likes to freeze stock, and I've actually started doing that because a lot of times if you're making a shrimp dish that's not a gumbo, like a barbecued shrimp or something, I always peel the shrimp before I do my barbecued shrimp just to make it easier to eat. I know that's not the preferred method of preparation, but then I have all those shrimp shells, and as I'm peeling, a lot of times I think, I hate to waste this, but I don't need a stock today. But I'll go ahead and make the stock and put it in the freezer, and then later, if I'm making something, I'll already have a starting point.
Sure. No, absolutely. I mean, good point, because you never want to throw away the bones. Even when I roast a chicken, the last thing I'm going to do is throw those bones away. I'm going to make a stock with it and put a quart of chicken stock in the freezer. Why am I have a roasted chicken with all the bones? I'm going to throw them away? Of course not. I'm going to need it for chicken gumbo in a month, so why not go ahead and make it? One of the things that also come up is a big, big point of confusion is okra. When do you use it? When do you add it to the pot? I don't like okra, blah, blah, blah. You know, you hear all that. Well, remember that okra is a thickening agent. It comes from Africa. And, of course, okra gives gumbo its name. As you mentioned, kingumbo, the word for okra, is actually where gumbo comes from. Okra is normally associated in Louisiana with seafood or shellfish gumbo. You don't normally find okra in a chicken and sausage gumbo. You don't normally find okra in a wild game like a duck gumbo. You find okra much more readily seen in a seafood gumbo. And why is that? Because the season where okra is growing in Louisiana tends to be outside of the game season. So you see it inside of the shrimp and crab gumbos. And okra doesn't really flavor the pot that much. There's not a whole lot of additional flavor. It's the texture that okra adds to the gumbo. It gives it a viscosity that's a little bit different than just the roux. And today I'd like to give you all a recipe real fast for a Louisiana seafood gumbo, yeah?
You're probably going to tell us this in just a second, but I always smother the okra before I actually put it in the pot. Is that what you do?
Well, what I do, my mother and grandmother used to put okra in a cast iron pot with a little bit fresh tomato, and the tomato would cut that stringiness in the okra, that kind of slimy protein that comes about when you cook okra. They would put a little tomato, which is acid, so that would break that apart. And they would cook it in a cast iron pot, stirring long and slow until the okra cooked all the way down. Today, I think the microwave was created to smother okra.
Oh, really?
That's exactly right. So you take a glass bowl, you take 2 cups of okra, slice it about as thin as a nickel. Make sure it's young, tender okra, too, not the big longhorns, you know. And put those 2 cups or 3 cups or 4 cups of thinly sliced okra into a glass bowl. Put about maybe 2 or 3 tablespoons of a diced tomato out of the can and put it in. Stir it around. That's the acid. You can sprinkle a little salt and pepper in it if you want to. Cover it with a clear wrap and punch 2 or 3 holes in the clear wrap. Put it in the microwave. Put it on 5 minutes high. Uncover it and stir it. Put it back in 5 minutes high. Take it out, stir it around, put it back in, 5 minutes high. That's 15 minutes. The okra is all smothered down nicely into the bottom of the bowl. And then you can take it and put it onto the stove and get it ready for your gumbo. It's all ready to go at that point. I'm going to begin my seafood gumbo with a pound of 35-count shrimp to the pound, peeled, deveined. And I'm going to divide them up because I always divide everything and put it on the side because I want to sacrifice some and I want to keep some nice and fresh. A pound of jumbo lump crab meat, a pick through, make sure no shells. 2 dozen shucked oysters, liquid reserve. Take a dozen of those oysters and put them off to the side. Pound of claw crab meat, same thing, pick for bones. A cup of that sliced frozen okra. I would microwave it like I just told you to do, or you can add it to the dish as is. A cup of okra isn't that much. I'm going to begin my roux. Roux is the thickening agent made with equal parts of oil and flour. 1 cup of vegetable oil, 1 cup of flour. Bring the oil up to the smoke point where you start to see the smoke coming out of the pot. That's 385 degrees. Then I add my cup of flour in with a whisk. I stir like crazy. It's going to take about 5 minutes to get a beautiful dark brown roux. Do not quit stirring. Black specks will appear. It means it's burnt, which means it's bitter. So stir very, but you have to get your oil hot first. Get that oil, like I said, at a smoke point. Oil, vegetable oil normally smokes at 375. So if you get to 375, 85, that's where you're going to see that first little whiff of smoke. That's all you want. Throw that flour in. The water or the moisture from that flour is going to just shoot right out of the top of the pot in with a whisk. Just keep stirring. Begin at the middle and like a kaleidoscope, go to the end of the pot, back to the middle, all the way to the end, to the edges, until that nice dark brown roux appears. Okay, once the roux is nice and dark brown, and it should look like a mahogany color, but no darker, I'm going to add 2 cups of diced onions, 1 cup of diced celery, a half a cup of diced bell pepper, a quarter cup of diced garlic. You notice that, Michelle? Two cups, 1 cup, half cup, quarter cup. Everything descends from the onions. And 1/2 pound of sliced smoky sausage, especially andouille. I'm going to stir that into the dark brown roux and let it caramelize in there for about 10, 15 minutes. Just wilt the vegetable. That andouille is going to give the great smoky flavor. Then I'm going to add 3 quarts of water, or if you wish, if you save the shrimp shell, shellfish stock, and whisk that into the roux. And once you throw that in, then I add 1/2 of my shrimp, 1/2 of my crab meat, 1/2 of my oysters, and I put the rest in the refrigerator for later. And I bring it to a rolling boil, reduce to simmer, and I continue to cook that for about 45 minutes. And then at that point, adding a little water is necessary to keep the viscosity of that of a nice thickened soup. Then to finish it, season to taste, salt, pepper, granulated garlic, salt, pepper to taste, of course, and then a little 1/2 cup of chopped parsley, 1/2 cup of green onions, and then add all the rest of your seafood and just stir until the shrimp curl and get pink. It's only going to be about 3 to 5 minutes. Serve it over steamed white rice. Anyway, hey, good gumbo weather, y'all. Get cooking and let us know the results on Facebook. See you back next week.
Musical traditions in far-flung lands are connected by invisible instrumental links and by song streams flowing across oceans. Join me to discover the connections and follow the flow on The Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
tune in every Saturday night at midnight for The Diamond Sea, a weekly mixtape featuring the best in independent music from the 80s, 90s, and today. Here on 88.7 KRVS, public radio for Acadiana.
Hi, this is Helen Forster from E-Town. We've got a fantastic group this week, Pokey LaFarge and the South City Three, plus a dynamic new husband and wife team, Shovels and Rope, and co-founder of Earth Day, Dennis Hayes, all this week in E-Town. So join us.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
Public Radio for Acadiana. KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.